I'm your average action movie survivor. When I'm not busy trying to avoid massive superhero battles with people getting thrown through walls or dodging giant robots about to step on me, I'm listening to the Part-Time Fanboy Podcast. Be sure to check out Part-Time Fanboy at parttimefanboy.com for somewhat weekly podcasts and reviews about various fanboy-related subjects. Also, be sure to like them on Facebook and follow them on Twitter. Do it now, because the Robopocalypse is coming!
Part-Time Fanboy.
Part-Time Fanboy doing my thing.
More powerful than a locomotive.
Fanboy.com.
Let us begin this Part-Time Fanboy podcast, shall we?
Yes.
Yeah. All right. This is Christian Horn, and this is the Part-Time Fanboy podcast. I am on the line with my good friends Reina Velarde.
Hey, Christian.
And Paul Edwards.
Hello.
And this week's discussion revolves around the just released Deadpool 2.
Yeah.
Starring everybody's favorite wise ass, Ryan Reynolds. Not everyone's favorite Green Lantern, but everyone's favorite wise ass. So, yes, Deadpool 2 was released this weekend.
Favorite Green Lantern, man.
What was that?
He's like five people's favorite Green Lantern.
Maybe five. At this point, I don't even think he likes it. So, there you go.
Yeah, pretty sure that pretty clear the his feelings on the Green Lantern after this movie.
Yeah, yep, exactly. I think you nailed it. But yep, this is the second Deadpool movie. It is a different director than the first. The first was Tim Miller. This Deadpool 2 is directed by David Leitch. Looks like. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. I saw it over the weekend, like a 9 a.m. show. I'm so happy that they're showing like 9 a.m. movies in my neighborhood. What did you both think of this entry into the Deadpool franchise?
It was pretty much what I expected. Like, I knew it was going to be funny. I wasn't aware of all the characters, which probably spoiler before anybody says anything.
Oh, yeah. Spoilers all over.
But yeah, so there were some cool characters that I was like, oh, who's that? Oh, got it. I've kind of heard of that character. That makes sense, sort of.
Sure.
Yeah, like kind of you posted, I don't want to step all over what you said,
no.
But I agree with what you said, that it was kind of like what I expected, but in a good way. But like, yeah, and I think it fit the formula, so it wasn't bad, but mm-hmm. It wasn't anything new or unique or like off the wall for me.
Yeah. Yeah, what about you, Paul?
Yeah, I mean, it kind of felt like, I don't know, like a second issue in a way of a comic or something. Where it's like, okay, this is how the franchise works. You know, we're gonna send up all of these particular tropes, and we're gonna play around this way, and you know, this is how we're going to, you know, to treat this. The first one was in a way like a one shot, you know?
Uh-huh.
And you know, like, hey, let's see if this is successful. And it was. And so this is sort of like, okay, this is what a franchise, you know, based on that could look like. That's how it felt like to me.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it was very much like, I enjoyed it. I had a really fun time at the movies. It was a 9 a.m. show, and the theater wasn't full, but there were people in there. There were like groups of people. It wasn't, I wouldn't say even half full, but there were a lot of people in the theater enough to, so like when somebody else was laughing, you know, you would know that, you know, the bunch of people in the audience would laugh together, you know, so, yeah, I mean, I think I said on Facebook something like it wasn't as like wildly like innovative or whatever as the first one, but It was a good time at the movies. Like, I felt like that the first one was like very original and very mm-hmm. sort of like tightly constructed and like a little bit outrageous, and it was completely unexpected, like what you were gonna get. And this one, it was really funny to me how much this one sort of like settled into a formula. You know what I mean? Where I was like, oh, we're not gonna take any chances with this one. We're gonna do sort of very much what the first one is, but with a story that's less sort of like tightly knit together, but with a bigger budget. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah, and a little less of like a, you know, a personal story, I guess, you know, and more a generic, like a kind of mass appeal story. And that was like one of the interesting things I found about it, is that it really like played around a lot with like mass appeal tropes, that there are a lot of in the Marvel/DC age of storytelling. I mean, you know, and it was really cool to see, you know, some of these, we're going to do like, you know, from the beginning, like it's a family movie, and it's like, okay, you know, what are they going to do with this family movie? You know, in a lot of ways, it really did sort of hit the standard blockbuster numbers as it's sort of like making fun of hitting the standard blockbuster numbers, you know?
Yeah.
But also, because it's Deadpool had these really interesting progressive things about it, right? You know, like he's butt grabbing, not Cable. Well, you know, the Colossus. Thank you. But also, you know, the relationship with him and Cable, and like the lesbian teen couple. And so I think there are a lot of cool extra kind of progressive elements to it that made it go beyond just being a quote-unquote family, not family movie.
Yeah, it's definitely not for kids. Let's just put that right out there. Like, there may have been like a kid or two in my theater, which I just find shocking. But I'm just like, it's definitely not for kids. There is a bit where he says, like, this is a family movie. It's interesting, like, what Paul was saying about, like, starting off as sort of like a family, sort of like not a sort of personal story. And I thought, like, it's funny because I thought the very beginning did start off that way. Like, it started off, it was very personal, and they sort of, start to sort of develop the story with Vanessa, Morena Baccarin's character, who everyone, you know, obviously fell in love with in the first one. And it seems like they're going in this really interesting new direction where they're sort of like maybe planning on having a kid, and you're like, where's this going? But it's also a bit predictable because, like, as I was watching that scene develop and they sort of reveal the plan of, like, where they're going, like, they want to have a child, which I can't think of, like, maybe two more inappropriate people to have a child. But I very much, like, you know, that's the plan. And then as soon as that sort of was revealed, I was like, oh, she's dead. She's dead. Yeah. Like, I was like, all the way, she's dead. But what surprised me was how quickly it happened, like right in the very beginning. And it was kind of shocking to me because I think everyone in my audience, myself included, was like really bummed out that they did that because that's a character that I really liked from the first one.
Well, and even after that happened, you know, and he had all those funny credits going up about like, yep, that really happened. Yep, they killed her. Like, I was almost like, So the movie's over then, right? You
know, I know, right?
Like, yeah, the movie's done. Like at that point, when something, you know, tragic happens like that, and then to acknowledge, you know, how shocking it is, and that's funny. And I didn't catch whatever the first two things. I just heard Paul chuckling, and I'm like, oh, something's funny's happening. What am I missing? And then I started reading, and I'm like, oh, they're funny. Oh, got it. Well, thank you. And that's what's nice about having, you know, people.
Well, I think like one of the things like immediately that it calls out is like, I it goes into that like pseudo Bond credit sequence, you know? And it's like, oh yeah, because like that's the pattern. That's what always happens. It's like, the hero's woman is killed, so the hero goes for revenge, you know. Yeah. And it's like, oh God, it's going to be another one of those movies, but at the same time, it like really, by sending up those movies, like it really I feel like that's the one thing that really gave this movie its heart, you know? Because it was clear that he did miss her, you know, throughout the movie. And, you know, they did, you know, sort of fuck with their audience, I think, in a good way by opening it like that.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm just wondering because I don't know if, Raina, you've probably heard the term within comics called fridging. There used to be this, it was Gail Simone, right? Did she write that column, Paul? Or
yeah, she coined the term, I think.
Women in refrigerators. Women in
refrigerator, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, which was basically sort of the idea of like the hero's girlfriend being killed off so that the hero could go on his quest, and women just being sort of used as a plot device to, you know, move the story forward, as opposed to being sort of like a real character within the story. And it's funny, I just wonder how many women were out there, because I did hear some people on Facebook and online complaining about Gamora sort of being fridged in Infinity War. You know, what does, how many female fans would have been upset at that, like happening to Vanessa, like the opening? And it's funny how they, because those credits really do go sort of a way to deflect that and be like, we know what we did, we know it's messed up, but just, you know, stay with us. You know what I'm saying? Raina, do you have any opinions about like that development, like straight from the beginning, or?
Yeah, I mean, I was kind of bummed because I thought, oh, we're not going to get to see her do anything. Like, maybe she was going to become, you know, like part of the group and like fight. And I kind of wanted to see her more in that role.
Interesting, yeah.
Being, you know, the damsel in distress and whatnot, you know, and the her being set up. Oh no, she's not going to be a mother. And so yeah, like I can see that that's problematic. I think it's nice that they at least kept her to be. But still, I think, yeah, we still set her up to be the reason why he lives, right? The reason he has to, or not even the reason he lives, right? She kind of, it goes down that anti-hero's quest, you know, matching Deadpool as being the anti-hero too, perhaps, because she's not the reason for him to live or fight. She's the reason he wants to die.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's almost maybe that twist where like, sure, maybe we, you know, we killed her off, but... like, we're, you know, to make Deadpool have that darker side, to, I don't know, maybe to match that. But yeah, I mean, I get what people are saying for sure about killing her off and then making her just that item, right?
Sure. Yeah. It's funny how sort of the story very much played with that. And I think Paul is also right. Like, you know, it kind of like sends up that whole vengeance film thing. But it was weird for me in a way how this movie sort of kind of did that, you know, sends him on the sort of like revenge filled, like, oh, I'm going to get the guy that, you know, killed. Well, he gets him right away. He catches him and he throws him in front of a bus. And then from there on in, it becomes more of like, you know, because the whole movie could have been like just this revenge thing where that's what he wanted and is trying to find the guy and hunts him down. But then it becomes like something like really different and sort of really embraces sort of the rest of that 20th Century Fox like X-verse. And that was where I had a little bit of like, yeah, you know, when Cable shows up and like, you know, and he's like, they're trying to make him join the X-Men and, you know, all that stuff is kind of funny and they joke about it, but it sort of opens up the universe a bit more where I felt like it was more self-contained in the first film. You know what I mean? So I was like, oh, I was very interested to see like where they went, you know, as far as like Deadpool in a world full of like mutants who, you know, people hate, you know?
And it's interesting that you say that too, because right before we started this podcast, I had thought of Cable in my mind, put him in a different movie, and then I had to go like, no, he was in that movie, right? Like his character, right, is definitely, I don't think, I mean, built for the Deadpool world, and that's why it's funny. Ultimately, I think they're using that as like a humorous tool, but like when I see him or I think about his character, how he looks, how he's filmed, he's definitely. In like a darker world, darker by like how it's filmed and how it looks on the screen, not like dark humor or dark, you know, darkness that Deadpool is.
So
it's interesting that you say that, because even when Cable came out, I was trying to figure out who is he, like, all right, he's kind of Cyclopsy, and then
you don't even know how Cyclopsy he is.
But soon as I was like, hey, who's that? And Paul leaned over and explained. I'm like, oh, got it. Okay. I totally
was able to lean over and explain it in the movie theater, because that is one convoluted character, Cable, in the comic.
All he was,
I think I said, I was like, it's Cyclops and Phoenix's kid from an alternate timeline.
Okay, got it. I didn't need any more than that. I'm like, okay, makes sense. So, I have a few follow-up questions, but none that needed to be answered in the movie theater.
Yeah, I don't
talk in the movie theater if I can help it.
What's funny, too, is that, like, it really embraced, like, the 90s X-verse.
Yeah, for sure.
And, like, that is a very particular, like, X time, you know what I mean? That was the time that I actually stopped reading a lot of the X books because of, like, a lot of these new characters that were coming in, these alternate timelines and everything. And, like,
I hated Cable. I hated all that stuff. Like, those were some characters that I was just like, it was the, when all those X books started coming out, like, ad nauseum.
Right. Yeah. But what I found funny is that, like, this movie actually made me sort of a little nostalgic for the 90s.
that's true.
Superhero stuff. I was just kind of like, oh, look at Shatterstar over there.
I know, right?
They brought out Shatterstar, for goodness sakes, you know? And it's just like, you know, the ridiculous costumes with the belts and the pouches and everything like that. I mean, they really sort of went out of their way to make all of that stuff look good. And it's like, oh, that's how this stuff was always sort of supposed to look in their heads. Yeah. You know? And it was just kind of cool to see that happen.
Yeah. You're absolutely right.
but it was also gratifying to see them killed off quickly.
Yeah. Well, you're absolutely right. It was really funny to me to see those characters, particularly something like Shatterstar, and Domino, who I really like with the, I'm totally going to massacre her name, Zazie Beetz. The actress, she's on Atlanta, and she's fantastic on that show, and she was great as Domino. But it was really interesting to see them introduce somebody like Shatterstar, who I think is a character that is pretty much kind of considered, like, in Lee Field's, like, sort of like Liefeld's, whatever, however you pronounce his name, sort of like Hall of Shame of characters, you know, like this sort of like blatant ripoff of like every other character that even he himself created, you know. But to see him sort of like taken seriously as a construct in a film and like make him as cool as looking as they possibly could, you know, and then obviously just sort of like
helicopter.
Exactly. I mean, there's a lot of like really fun stuff in there. And it's funny to me how much they obviously in this movie played up Cable to, first of all, Josh Brolin as Cable was fantastic. Like, I have to say, I also have to say that I don't think Josh Brolin works out enough. I think he needs to work out more. I don't think he works out enough. I think I honestly think he needs to add some like more 10-pound weights. 50-pound weight, whatever, and do some more reps because he's not working out enough. But anyway, I thought he was, like, fantastic as Cable, and it was kind of great to sort of, especially after Infinity War, to, like, you know, obviously his arm is CGI'd or whatever, and, you know, they do something with his eye, but to sort of just see, like, his persona sort of, like, come out as well, even though it's kind of one-dimensional, very much. Like, they play Cable up to be sort of a Terminator sort of clone, you know, from the future, and he's got the mechanical arm, and whenever he shows up, they've got that, like, dum-dum-dum-dum-dum music or whatever. You know, it's very interesting how Terminator-y they went with Cable. Just seeing him in action and move and use the guns and the devices and fight, I was like, it was the first time I ever thought like that character was kind of cool, because in comics I was never a Cable fan and never thought he was interesting and just thought it was just like one of these anachronism sort of like whatever characters from the future that just was there to screw stories up, you know?
Right. And I think Brolin did a great job of actually, you know, just getting to the core of like what the it's like. Okay, yeah, it's actually a very simple thing. It's just a guy who's, you know, pissed that his world doesn't exist anymore. You know, but just by getting rid of like all of the crazy backstory behind that and just making it, taking it to his sort of most simple level, I think they that made that character interesting. Yeah, I agreed, for the first time since they started cabling.
Cabling. Oh, that's great. So, I mean, as the plot sort of like moves along, Deadpool actually tries to blow himself up. He's unsuccessful, and sort of Colossus, which was a great element of sort of the first movie, basically picks up the pieces and sort of like brings him to the X-Mansion to heal. And they sort of get into this whole like thing of like where Colossus is trying to convince him to be a hero again, right?
Yeah, or just to be a hero, period. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or just, you know,
to be a good guy.
You know, I think it's just that whole thing. It's
a trainee.
It's that whole like, you know, thing of like, you know, those two characters are just made for each other. You know, you've got, they're essentially like the Oscar and Felix of like the movie. They're completely opposite in like, you know, their moral code. They're completely opposite in like pretty much every way, but like they still like get each other and they're just hilarious to bounce off of each other.
Yeah. It's funny to me how the characterization of Colossus has changed so much in the movies. You know what I mean? I mean, they basically sort of made him this sort of like Superman like character. And, you know, Colossus was very sort of like naive in the X-Men when I was growing up, and sort of like, you know, a Russian boy sort of off the farm and in a new world. But this sort of Colossus is sort of almost like Deadpool's like Jiminy Cricket, you know what I mean? Where he's very much like his conscience, you know what I mean? And, you know, he gets him to try and join the X-Men, and he kind of talks him into it. And there's a lot of like really funny dialogue about, you know, from Deadpool, you know, talking about like they couldn't even get the famous X-Men in this movie. Like they couldn't even get the you know, like, come on, like the last movie made a ton of money. Like we should be able to get somebody that rates, not just you. And there's all these like little bits in the mansion where the other X-Men from the other current movies are kind of like hiding out from him in a room. It was some really clever stuff.
Well, and not just in another room, but they almost look like lesser characters, right? Like, he wasn't quite Beastly. He was like a cosplayer guy in the room, and you got a little glimpse of that. But yeah, I thought that was pretty a funny little bit that they continued on, that like, oh, well, at least they got the third X-Men. They got Yu-Gi-Oh! Or what's her name?
Yu-Gi-Oh?
Yeah, Yu-Gi-Oh! I did say it right.
Yeah.
Yu-Gi-Oh!
Oh my god. So the Japanese like anime girl stuck in there. It's great.
Yeah, she's marvelous, because I was just thinking about it and I was like, you know, I think I must have known, I've known like 1,000 Yukios over my life. You know what I mean? Like that person who's just like, you know, cheerful and peppy, and they don't say a lot, you know, but you just, you know, they're just cute as a button, and you wave to them, and it's a, that was, she was,
I mean, because even as Deadpool's dying.
Yeah. Bye, you know, she's like the little, she's like the unicorn chaser of the movie. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Well, she's the complete opposite of Negasonic Teenage Warhead. Yeah, and it totally makes sense, like, that she, you know, very much, that those two were paired up and a couple, you know, where one is like very negative and sort of like down on everything. The other one's like very positive and, you know, dresses in bright colors and has pink hair and stuff like that. It was a nice little sort of pairing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. That Ryan Reynolds got to play off of, because, you know, Negasonic Teenage Warhead would be so frustrated with everything he's doing. And yet her girlfriend, her partner, would, you know, love everything that he's saying. I mean, she even outwardly says it at one point, like, I really like this guy. And she's like, ugh, don't encourage him or something like that. And it's a really funny bit, because it's like, oh, now, you know, and we've all had that where we have a girlfriend or boyfriend or a spouse or somebody that likes somebody that we can't stand. And we're just like, oh my God, no, please don't say you like that person. So yeah, there's a lot of like really funny stuff in there. But after that, I mean, that's sort of when the plot sort of like kicks into gear, when they sort of have to take down or capture, or they're not called in, but they see that there's an incident going on where they finally meet this young boy, Fire Fist, correct?
Fire Fist, that's right.
Which is considered probably the worst name ever in the history of X-Men names, I think. Although I'm sure we can find more.
They don't even put Fire Fist on IMDb, by the way.
He's not on there. I'm looking at it right now. Where is that kid?
He's under Zeitgeist.
Oh, wow. That's rough. How did he get knocked all the way down there? He's like one of the big stars of the movie.
He's the eighth one listed.
Oh, yeah, there he is. Oh, Russell. DJ Miller,
so he wins.
Yeah, he's listed by his real name, not Fire Fist.
Right.
It's such a crappy superhero name. The other characters get it, right,
Nathan? Even Nathan Summers makes it for Cables, and we never refer to him as Nathan.
Yeah, exactly. I know, right?
That's funny.
You're giving away everyone's secret identity on the Internet Movie Database.
Everybody gets a superhero name except you, Russell, because yours.
Except you. The one who wanted it the most in the movie, too.
Oh, I know, right?
Yeah.
And that's sort of where you start to get into sort of like your typical X-Men storyline, which is very much like we're mutants, we're hunted, and we're hated. And I was like, okay, where's this going to go? And there's a really great bit in that with where Deadpool finds out that the kid has been abused. Mm-hmm. And they act like he's going to like sort of, you know, he does that sort of speech with like there's four or five moments, you know, in life. And I had watched the first Deadpool the night before, so I remembered this whole like Colossus like giving him the speech of like four or five moments in life where you decide to become a hero or something, and he's doing that whole thing and he basically turns it around on its head and ends up shooting somebody, one of the sort of wards at this school, or what would you call it? Like a juvenile facility?
Yeah, I thought it was like a school for mutants.
It was almost like if they had crossed like the X-Men's school with like a juvenile detention center.
Exactly.
Detention-y. I thought it was more like American Horror Story Coven when they're all in the same house.
Yeah. But I mean, there was but it was like a religious school.
Yeah, well, the dude was religious and definitely lifted from, like, what's that, God Loves, Man Kills character?
Very, very similar to that graphic novel, yeah.
Yeah. And played by, I don't know the actor's name, but he is on Ray Donovan, and that guy's an amazing actor, but he sold it as, like, this sort of, like, creepy, like, religious guy who wants to convert all mutants, or I don't know what it was. I don't even think he was trying to convert them. He was just trying to torture them.
Yeah, maybe some kind of negative reinforcement or something, like shock therapy or something.
It's sort of a take on sort of like gay conversion therapy, right?
That seemed to be like where it was going. It was funny because like the movie got very political and pointed at times. We were sitting there watching a movie where everyone dies and everyone blows up, but I think that's sort of an interesting, question for Deadpool to bring up. I mean, he can't die, so really essentially it's like, what is the value of life, And like, that's something that a lot of the characters sort of end up having to struggle with, and it's kind of really interesting to see in a mainstream sort of popcorn flick, people having a little bit of a, struggle with their actual life, with quality of, with what their purpose is.
Well, it was interesting too, because I mean, the sort of thing of it is, Yeah, Deadpool never really has a purpose. I mean, he's sort of like just like a badass, and he kills people, and he's sort of like a wise ass and stuff like that. And this movie, once they sort of move past that early Fire Fist thing, and they are sent to prison together, and Deadpool's powers are removed because of this collar thing that he has, he sort of comes to this realization or revelation that he thinks that his purpose in life is to basically help this Fire Fist become something different and better than the track that he's on, because the Cable ends up infiltrating the prison, and there's some awesome fist fights and stuff like that. That fight between Cable and Deadpool was particularly solid, that fight scene in the prison. But, I mean, you know, Deadpool comes to realize that, he feels that because he could not have a child with Vanessa, that it's his mission to make sure that Fire Fist does not become this awful human in the future who ends up killing Cable's family, which is why Cable's back in the past, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, which also just goes to show you that if they just had a conversation, none of that fight would have ever had to
Well, superheroes, they gotta fight. Super people, they just gotta fight. It's like comic book rules 101. What's that?
Why are you get the kid? Mind your business. All right, I guess we're going to fight.
Yeah, exactly. Everyone's got too much testosterone in these type of movies. That's the problem. They just got to duke it out, you know? But yeah, no, there was some really fun stuff in there. I loved the sort of Black Tom Cassidy comment that he kept making, where he was like, why are you such a racist? The guy, you know, and the guy's not even black. Like, that stuff was really funny. I mean, there was a lot of really fun stuff in there. But
he made the like cultural appropriation joke because of the dreadlocks.
Yeah.
And that's why he was calling him Black Tom.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah. But yeah.
Well, no, the guy called himself Black Tom Cassidy.
Oh, he called himself Black Tom.
Yeah. That's the character's name from the comics.
Tom Cassidy is a comic character.
Got it.
Right.
Okay.
Isn't he the Juggernaut's brother? Or no.
Yeah. I think he's like his half brother or something.
He's like the Juggernaut's half brother.
Got it.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah. I'm looking it up right now.
At the same time, that doesn't mean that he can't, you know, be guilty of cultural.
Oh, sure. Sure.
Yep. Yeah, he's the Juggernaut's brother or half brother or something like that. Well, isn't Professor X is like his brother? I can't remember. Professor X is his half brother. Yeah.
Professor X is a mutant. Like his dad, I think, in one of the timelines. So, like,
Yeah, it's all over the place. Yeah. Oh, he wasn't the Juggernaut's brother. He was just his partner.
Oh,
they would team up together. Yeah. Which is interesting because later on we would meet the Juggernaut in this movie, which is really funny because we sort of end up getting the big sort of Colossus Juggernaut fight that everyone wanted, and it does not play out at all how you would have thought it does.
Yeah. Good Juggernaut, by the way, man.
Do you think so? Like, I thought it was way too CGI.
Yeah, I kind of did too. Really bad. It was a little too cartoony. Yeah. I agree.
Especially after coming off of, like, say, Infinity War, where, like, Thanos was, like, immaculately rendered and, you know, just looked, like, really great. At Juggernaut, to me, he looked like an action figure that he was just very stiff. You could tell that they didn't have or... I don't know if they didn't have the budget, but I don't think tons of stuff was tons of effort was put into making the Juggernaut look real. But Paul, you liked it? What is it that you liked about him?
I liked how, this is the first time like I actually bought the destructive nature of Juggernaut. Like, you know, like the times that they've rolled him out before have just been like, I feel like total fail. And at least this one, I felt somewhat of a threat from the character, or like, you know, a use of the character beyond just, you know, I'm the Juggernaut, bitch. You know?
Yeah, sure.
That, but still agree with Christian at the same time.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting because I'm one of those people that doesn't hate X3 as much as like everyone else does. Like, I actually found the third X-Men movie to be kind of entertaining when I saw it in the theater. And I know a lot of people like come down on me on that. But the thing is like, I don't think it's great or anything, but I'm like, compared to like the other two, I'm like, this is fine, you know. And so Juggernaut's appearance in that movie, I thought was like, you know, I know that they were like, I'm the Juggernaut bitch. But now we've got a two movies where basically, you know, the guy is basically cursing a blue streak through the whole movie. You know what I mean? And I guess that's more his Deadpool's character. I almost called him Bluetooth for a second. What? What just happened? I had a brain fart. But I mean, I get what you're saying, Paul, like that he was much bigger and sort of more threatening than he has been before. But I was just giddy to see that Colossus and Juggernaut fight, because ever since that issue of the X-Men where
Kitty the bar.
Yeah, in the bar. Yeah, yeah. And I was hoping they would do a callback to that in some way, but they didn't.
Yeah, that was a good issue. I remember that.
Oh, my God. It's one of the best issues of X-Men ever. Yeah, it's fantastic stuff. But, yeah, I mean, and from at that point, you know, you definitely get the assembling of the team, which is really funny because they sort of put out an ad and, you know, and they have all these
people.
What was that?
And accepted everyone who applied.
Yeah, exactly. Except for the cab driver who they won't let in the group.
Right.
Deadpool's cab driver, which I thought that was a hysterical scene when the other guy walks in and they're like, oh, hey, like, what's your superpower? He's like, I don't have any superpowers. And they're like, well, what are you doing here? He's like, I saw the ad. I thought it would be fun. And the guy behind him is like, damn it, you know, or whatever.
Yeah, that was funny. Well, even when the cab driver kind of has a moment where he can be with them, he's like, you know what? Now I'll be in the car.
Yeah, yeah. He's like, I'm out of here. Yeah, it's really funny. And, you know, from then on, you're sort of just getting the, you know, trying to stop Firefist from sort of accomplishing what he does, I guess, in Cable's timeline, which is destroy, get his first taste for blood, right?
Right.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I have to say, like, going back to Domino's character, I love the way that they handled sort of her powers and the good luck thing. I thought that was absolutely fantastic. And I love this sort of superimposing of, like, one of her first scenes where Deadpool is like, luck, that doesn't, you know, and he's going on, and that doesn't make any sense. That's not a superpower. It doesn't work. And meanwhile, she's sort of like parachuting in, and she's the only one who makes it safely, and the cars are like flying around her, and she's barely, you know, making sort of like any effort to dodge anything. I thought that was really, because, you know, they have these characters in the comics, like sort of like Spider-Man's the Black Cat and stuff like that, that, you know, their powers are luck or giving other people bad luck or good luck and stuff like that. And I thought that that was just like a genius way of playing her out, where she just, you know, barely gets hurt and nothing, you know, very dramatically played out with all the effects and stuff.
Yeah, it could have been a little Rube Goldberg-y too. Yeah. Like, it could have just been like ridiculously silly, but I didn't feel like it was.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I like, she was one of my favorite characters also. Like, it almost made me be like, oh, I kind of want to be here for Halloween. She's really badass. Yeah. But I also feel like the like just lucky part of Domino is like a metaphor for like not just like female heroes, but like women, period, right? Where the answer to, you know, oh, well, how can you do that? Like, you're just a woman. Her, it's like, what's your superhero? I'm just lucky, right? Like, she's just
that's badass. Interesting. Oh, yeah. That's a thing that I never would have thought to look at, huh?
Yeah. So I like that. I think that's. Yeah. I think that's her superhero. She's like, I'm just lucky. I'm just badass.
Yeah, it's funny because, like, I love this the line that this movie kind of strides on, which is like, I mean, we talked a little bit about it before, Paul did, where it's very much like, you know, sort of classic superhero action, but knocking sort of like the stuffing out of that at the same time, with like weird things or like taking out the whole X-Force group before they even go on their first mission, you know, all those like silly, like little things that are mixed in there that sort of separate it from what sort of even like your regular Marvel movie becomes, where, you know, it's just like big dramatic action, one thing on top of another. But this movie's very smart in that it mixes that big dramatic action in with, things that automatically keep you from taking it way too seriously. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, there's, it's, I think that what the what this movie sort of perfects is, like, it just sort of disarms you, because, like, it'll throw something your way and you'll see, like, this really great action sequence, and then they'll undercut that with something super funny and then hit you with something emotional and then throw it in another, you know, action sequence and do it again. And it just sort of kept coming at me from different places, and catching me sort of where I wouldn't expect. And I think it's really good at misdirecting its audience into, like, you're going a certain way here, but then, you know, playing it back and twisting it to make it innovative or funny.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, where the first one, you definitely got a feeling from the beginning that this was going to be very different and sort of, and I guess that's kind of like one of the strengths. I thought it was one of the weaknesses of this movie, where the first one was very different and you knew that it was different from the beginning. This one slides back and forth between what the first one was and sort of like what a sort of typical action movie is. And you're right. It sort of like keeps you on your toes that way, because you sort of, I mean, it's weird. It's like, so how we've all been conditioned to like watch action movies. Like once the action starts, you sort of think you're thinking like, okay, we're in, this is very intense. And this is sort of like a very big fight scene, but then it throws you, you know, off kilter with sort of like a humorous comment, or like, again, something like Domino, where the luck kicks in or something like that.
Yeah, or
a baby dick.
Or, yeah, oh my God. Yeah, the sort of Basic Instinct reference in this movie was,
yes,
unbelievably crazy.
But, you know, that's kind of what like Deadpool does for the comics, though, too, is that he'll like sort of send up, you know, all of those comic tropes and, you know, comment on all of that. You know, it's fun. You know, it's fun to like see a version of Deadpool that, you know, not only breaks the fourth wall for comic books, but also for film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of like really interesting stuff in there. But the one thing, the sort of big thing that kept sticking out to me while I'm watching the movie was the idea that Cable could time travel. And I'm sitting there thinking in the whole movie, well, why doesn't Cable just at the end go back and save Deadpool's girlfriend? You know what I mean? And it's sort of like when you get to the end, the time travel device is employed. And I was like, oh, here, they're going to do it. They're going to do it right now. And he does something different with it. He goes back, but it's mostly sort of to help Deadpool survive a fight. And I remember thinking, like, by the time you get to the end of the movie and that plays out, I was, like, very disappointed. But then you sort of get to this, like, end credit sequence that is, you know, brilliantly, very humorously executed.
So,
That's
my favorite end credit scene, because it, like, actually almost, it's like, it almost makes fun of the Marvel end credit scenes in a way. Yeah. But like, you know, but it was just so good. It was just a perfect joke. Go ahead.
Real quick. No, I just wanted to go back to what Christian said, about why didn't he use the time travel device to make it so that his girlfriend doesn't die.
Yeah.
But don't you have to, didn't they have to get to the point where Russell sees that he would have sacrificed himself, where Deadpool would have sacrificed himself for Russell?
Yeah, and that's, you're probably right. I mean, Cable's mission is definitely different than saving Deadpool's girlfriend. I mean, you're absolutely right. I hadn't really thought about that, where Cable has a different sort of set of desires than what Deadpool's are, and they wouldn't necessarily play into helping him save his girlfriend. But I was thinking, like, you know, because at one point you see sort of Cable like look at his bear and be like, oh, you know, he changed the future. And I thought like, oh, maybe Cable would be like, hey, you know, he saved my family, so I'm going to save his, you know, go back in time. But for me, I really think that the writers and the film directors really missed an opportunity to sort of like really mess with the audience's head. Because I mean, that's sort of like when he saves Vanessa with the time travel device, that's sort of like an afterthought in the, you know, end credit sequence. So you're kind of thinking like, did this really happen or did it not really happen? But if they had made it like part of the narrative, think about how much of a sort of mind fuck it would be to have them basically undo the whole movie in the final moments of the movie. Because if Deadpool's, you know, wife, girlfriend gets saved, then there's no reason for the rest of the movie. Yeah. And I just think that that would have been sort of the ultimate sort of Deadpool joke, where it's like, yeah, none of what you watched in the past 2 hours really makes any sense or matters anyway. You know, it's sort of like that Superman the movie thing when people overthink the end when he turns back to Earth and he goes to save Lois Lane. You know, you're kind of left like, huh? But I think they missed a really good sort of like writing story opportunity. And who knows, they probably thought of it.
But I think they got that moment in, I think they got that moment in the credits, though.
Like, yeah, it seemed like a throwaway to me, didn't it?
Yeah, but that's a Deadpool thing too. Is like, in a way, it's like, okay, we're throwing it away. Hey, guess what? Next movie, it's going to be completely reset, and she's going to be back. You know what? I mean, that's, for me, that felt very Deadpool.
Yeah, that makes sense.
You know, and let's face it, you know, how they end up, you know, just ultimately using it is just so funny, and it's so well done that it's like, yeah, that was about as good a movie joke as I've ever seen.
Yeah. I just felt, and you're probably right, but I felt it was kind of a throwaway, and it just would have been such a really fun big joke to play on the audience, you know, at the end.
I feel the thing is like they already had the sort of their big emotional scene. Uh-huh. Already, you know, if he does that, then like you sort of end up replaying that scene, and I'm a fan of it in the end credits as is.
Well, I think it would have had like a really huge impact as part of the main narrative, and then just be like, you'd be like, huh? But I see where you're coming from. I mean, it is a very Deadpool thing, especially when you add in all the other stuff that's in there with the, you know, retrofitting the original Wolverine movie. And
oh, thank God. I've been waiting.
That's great. Just cleaning up the timelines. The one thing that I will say about this movie is I've probably said this on the previous Deadpool podcast when we did part one, is I am not a Ryan Reynolds fan. I mean, I've never liked the movies that he's in. I find him kind of annoying and blah, blah, blah. I do think that with Deadpool, he has found like the perfect part for him, for like the type of personality he has or that he exudes on the screen. But I will say that there was a little bit of sort of like, and apparently Ryan Reynolds is an incredibly nice human being in real life, but on screen to me, he comes across a little smarmy, you know, and there was a little bit of like in this movie where it's like the Ryan Reynolds was like leaking out through the screen to me big time, where it was like, this is less Deadpool and this is more Ryan Reynolds. You know what I mean? And that was bugging me a little bit, to where, I don't know, like his persona was coming out a little bit more forced to me. Whereas in the first one, it seemed like, oh, he was actually sort of like playing a character called Deadpool that he was sort of born to play. Does that make sense?
I feel what you're saying. I like Ryan Reynolds though. But I get the like parts, because I feel like the other part that I think that he's perfect for is when he played Van Wilder. And so it's a little bit of that, right? Where his personality or because, you know, he's more vulnerable. And so maybe that's why you're seeing more Ryan Reynolds. Maybe he was trying to play the character more vulnerable because of Vanessa's death. For maybe just making excuses and pulling things out of my bum, but
yeah, no, there was just
to defend Ryan.
Yeah, well, I've never been a fan up until the first Deadpool, and then I was like, oh, okay. And obviously, what he did with Green Lantern definitely knocked him down several pegs in my book. But I'm actually glad that he's discovered this franchise. But there is a part of me that wishes that he had not sort of like gotten separated from the original director, because having watched the first Deadpool, I mean, the night before, I was like, damn, this was a solid movie. I mean, for me, the sort of negative for Deadpool 2, very much where it sort of, for me, started to lose focus is like in the jail bit, and then a little bit after that, where it was trying to find its way a little bit. It definitely recouped, but I just felt like that the director of the first Deadpool was like, like a visionary practically, especially watching it the night before, where I'm like, Jesus, like, look at all this amazing, crazy, not just the writing or the humor of it, but just camera angles, the way things were shot. It's sort of prettier looking, you know, it seems like a bit more care was put into the construction of scenes. And this one just seemed like, to me, a bit like maybe a bit like studio rushed. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel that. Yeah.
Well, I mean, again, you know, definitely the first one was more of, you know, a gamble, you know, with the first sure. one. The first one was like, you know, sort of proof of concept, you know, and and literally, you know, it was pushed. It was made because of the proof of concept got leaked, you know, because yeah. proof of concept was so good and so strong. That's what, you know, got it going. I mean, so definitely the second one sort of, you know, it can't be the first one, you know, but I think it does a very good job of continuing on the series in a way that, you know, that makes sense for the character and also makes sense, you know, as a franchise. I can see how they could turn out, you know, another few of these easily.
Yeah, but you don't think, like, the part of my concern is that my feeling or what I felt when I was watching this, and again, I enjoyed it very mm-hmm. much. I liked it a lot. That we are set, the first one was something brand new and fresh and took chances and was like, what is this? And now the second one, obviously you want sort of more of the same, but felt like it was like very much sticking into that groove and had found a formula and was just going to be comfortable with it, you know? I mean, maybe a third one will give them a chance to do something even crazier if it happens now that they're sort of like merging with Disney.
Yeah, you can never tell. I think it'll, you know, it opened very strong, so I assume that, you know, I just assume a sequel's in the future and everything. But, you know, again, like, this actually could be one of those things, too, where you end up with a franchise that has a bunch of very, very different kinds of movies.
For sure.
Each, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That's easily possible to do with
like
Deadpool.
Like, maybe even a different Deadpool?
A different person playing Deadpool. Do you think that's even possible? Like, I think like Ryan Reynolds is sort of like the Hugh Jackman of the Deadpool franchise. Like, you know, basically be a hard. What's that?
That's what I was going to ask you. Who else do we think could play Deadpool?
Like off the top of my head, I don't know, but yeah. I'm sure that there's a comedian out there who could probably do it, but it would definitely be a different feel. I mean, you know, I'm already, you know, people are wondering like who's going to be the next Wolverine, because I know that they killed him in a movie, but we are dealing with a sort of Infinity War franchise, which is apparently could reset the Marvel reality and bring all those properties, once Disney buys them, bring them all into like the Marvel universe, and then, you know, you're just starting from scratch, right?
Yeah. Entirely possible, you know.
Or like, they just de-age Hugh Jackman CGI, like they've been doing to people.
Let's face it, they only really need Ryan Reynolds' voice for the most part now on. You know, it's crazy. We are looking at the possibility of like franchise movies starring actors that will never be recast.
That's true. I mean, you know, unless their contract runs out or they're costing the studio way too much money. But yeah, I mean,
I'm talking like beyond death. Like
they did it with Princess Leia.
You know what I mean? Like, I mean, even with like Princess Leia, like, you know, if they're going back and retelling younger stories, they're going to recast like younger actors like they're doing with Solo. Mm-hmm. But like, it's entirely possible that they could make Deadpool movies from now till, you know, the end of time and never have to recast because they've got like Ryan Reynolds in a machine.
They've got his voice on a machine and an AI computer basically like voicing like the inflections and stuff like that.
Yeah. That's creepy.
That is creepy as hell.
Yep.
That is a script that Ryan Reynolds should make and should be written by Paul Edwards.
Yeah.
There you go. Ryan Reynolds makes Deadpool movies way after he's like 200 years. Deadpool part 50, whatever. Yeah.
Ryan Reynolds comes back from the future to stop Deadpool.
There you go. Nice. Nice job. Well done. Well done. Well, any final thoughts on the Merc with the Mouth part 2, Deadpool?
It was just a good old time at the movies. I was happy for the relief. You know, I'm deep in grading and end of the year stuff, and like it really successfully entertained me and got my mind off of my problems.
Yeah, nice. Yeah. Yeah, I did enjoy it. I mean, I went into an early show and I was a little tired, and I had to go see it by myself because Amy was taking my daughter to a school sort of thing that morning on a Saturday. And I went to see it, and I was just like, I was pleasantly surprised by how much I laughed out loud. Like, I laughed out loud many, many times. And it's like there's a part of me that's thinking, you know, we were thinking of sort of like you were saying, like, you could do as many sequels as possible. I really feel like this could be sort of like the Marx Brothers or the Laurel and Hardy or the Abbott and Costello of sort of like superhero movies. You know what I mean? As long as you sort of keep them funny and you keep them coming, you know what I'm saying? You could, you know, keep them going for a while, you know?
Yep, absolutely.
Nice, nice. All right, cool. Well, this has been the Part-Time Fanboy Podcast for Deadpool Part 2. My name is Christian Horn, and I have been on the line with my friends Reina Velarde and Paul Edwards. And I think we can all safely say that we enjoyed Deadpool Part 2, right?
Yes.
I did.
Awesome. Well, check us out on Facebook. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram. If you'd like to email us, the email is ptf@parttimefanboy.com. And we will be back soon with another episode. Thank you for listening. Bye.
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 Part-Time Fanboy. Part-time.